Welcome to This Week in FX PhD, your weekly wrap-up and behind the scenes at fxphd.com.
Hi, and welcome to this week's FX PhD. John Montgomery with you, joined as always by Mike Seymour. How's it going, my friend?
Oh, now you're just showing off with the deep voice thing. Like, it was bad enough.
No, I was going to go into the Thunder from Down Under comment. Introduce you as the Thunder
never
from
Down
Under.
Never lived down that male strip club thing in Vegas.
How's it going, my friend?
It's going really well. Yeah, no, it's really good. Actually, life is good. I'm a happy guy. I have 94 days before SIDGRAPH, and that actually translates to 94 days before I have to fly again.
Do you have a countdown calendar going somewhere?
Yeah, because I just totally maxed out on flying. I got so sick of flying. I'm just done. I was just like, I hate it. Really hate it. The smell of the airport, like as you're pulling up, there's kind of like an aviation fuel
jet fuel
in the air.
Yeah.
And that just sends me off. Like I almost have a physical reaction of pain from that alone. And you understand, of course, when I fly to LA or London, it's, 14 hours or in the case of London, 23 hours in the plane. So I'm deeply, deeply scarred. There you go. So that's it. So I'm not flying. So that's why I'm happy.
Myself as well, though I did actually enjoy the trip to FMX. That was a good, but I think it's come down to flying and traveling a lot less and concentrating, making sure that the trips that I do take are worth that, as you so eloquently put, the pain of flying, whether it's 12 hours to Europe or 14 hours to Sydney, wherever it might be. So pick and choose our battles for things like FMX and SIDGRAPH, for instance, and things like that. And avoid just flying for the sake of flying.
Do you think you'll go to SIDGRAPH Asia at the end of the year in China?
Oh, I have the ticket booked already. It's using a frequent flyer miles again. I did that right before I lost my status because now I'm just a peon in the cattle car calling for boarding since I didn't fly very much last year. But yes, I've already got my flight booked. I don't have any kind of hotels, but I figured I'd go ahead and book that flight number one just to get it reserved because, as you probably know, those kind of frequent flyer tickets where you don't pay anything, actually, you want to jump on those when they're available. So I don't know. It would be good to go, but probably leaning to not going. It's a tough time of year, isn't it, with the holidays, but I always enjoy the time that we spend together to strategize and talk FX PhD. We have the ability to do that much more at SIDGRAPH Asia than we do, say, at SIDGRAPH North America, where we have a crew and so forth helping us out there.
I think also the other thing about going to a SIDGRAPH, if you go to the main SIDGRAPH, there's almost always two things on at once that you want to go to. Where what I found is in SIDGRAPH Asia, there's normally something you want to go to, but there are those moments where you look at the thing and you go, yeah, there's nothing here that's really doing it for me. And then you just go and find someone and hang out at a coffee shop or some weird Asian version of a coffee shop and just, you know, remember we did that in whatever city that was. It was,
yeah, that's one of the, we had a pastry called the Obunma. Play on Obama. I had a little presidential seal.
And the one that we was across the way from the train line. I can't remember what country that was now. Was that Singapore? Yeah, it was, I think.
Yeah.
Anyway, it was like you could have been in any part of westernized Asia. Like it felt like a mall in Asia, and that was it. Like that was SIDGRAPH for me. It was, as opposed to Korea, which was spectacular and wonderful. And there was time on that Singapore trip where we left the convention center, but the Singapore convention center itself just feels to me like a giant mall.
Well, in Hong Kong, it's actually attached as well, isn't it? As I remember, there's that mall in the basement and you're attached to that.
Yeah, but you're right beside the ferry, and so you're down on the water and it's kind of...
Oh, Hong Kong, not... I'm sorry, I was thinking Korea. I was thinking Seoul and not Hong Kong.
Remember Seoul, it was snowing. We went across the way to the temple and stuff. That was cool.
But yes, and again, and I think one nice thing about Vancouver as well versus the LA ones is that you actually have people in LA because a lot of work has left LA, but there's still a ton of work in LA. And many of the people who actually come to the show in LA maybe only come for the day and actually aren't there the other days. Whereas I think in these more remote SIGGRAPH events, or you know, even something like FMX I was just at, the people tend to stay there for several days since they've made the trip, stay there and attend. It's, from my standpoint, I actually like that for networking and talking to people aspect. People actually go to the show to hang out, and they're not stuck having to go back to their facility to either approve shots, review sessions, work, whatever it might be. When it's in Los Angeles. So that's another thing I like actually about having it in Vancouver. Similarly, that also happens at the SIGGRAPH Asia events.
When we were at SIGGRAPH Vancouver last time, Olympic was launched. Remember that?
Yeah.
Yeah, it was a good conference, actually. I really liked that that conference. And for that exact reason that you outlined, which is that there were a lot of people there that were there for the duration. I think there was one other thing that was really good about SIGGRAPH in Vancouver. The local community was so proud to have SIGGRAPH there. There was such a sense of pride in what they achieved and what they were doing. I mean, we can talk about reasons for the shift out of LA to Canada, but if you are an artist on the ground, doesn't matter, you know, why the business has ended up where it is, you should be proud of the work that you're doing. And certainly the guys in Vancouver were very proud of what they managed to do. And I really, really thought that there was a kind of a graphics community pride in the Vancouver one that...
And they
I didn't
on,
get
some,
yeah.
No, they sorry, put on some good parties too.
Yeah.
The post house is there to kind of show off that. I mean, granted, you know, it's a network opportunity. It's also fun, but also kind of show off the fact that they were there as well and have people check them out and have a really big presence there. And Mike, I think that actually also goes true for those of you who are listening, to the people who are listening to this, that I think that the recruitment show at Vancouver was really good last time from what I remember. It was certainly always true in Los Angeles, but it certainly wasn't any less than it was in Los Angeles because it was Vancouver. And I would actually think it was there are actually more facilities that are recruiting into Vancouver at the Vancouver show when it was there a couple years ago.
Yeah, it's funny you should say that. I think that I remember that there was quite a strong British presence recruiting. Mm-hmm. Now, it could have been the time of year, but it also sort of felt like it was a bit like Switzerland in that, you know, trying to recruit in LA was kind of almost hostile. But they felt okay recruiting.
Well, it was also,
Vancouver.
Though, in fairness, because they'd opened up some places there, I believe, fairly recently, true. Right? I mean, I think that was there was a presence of having gone there as well that might have something to do with that. So I thought that was really good. And one other thing I thought I'd mention while I'm at it, I really suggest for those of you who are considering attending SIGGRAPH in Vancouver to check out a site like Airbnb. For the event. I say that because we've already got our place reserved, so you guys can go have at it. But there are really a lot of good values in actually housing. And if you're concerned about a trip to Vancouver costing a lot of money, it is an expensive city. Airfares, even getting there, aren't very expensive. But you can actually find reasonably inexpensive two-bedroom apartments on sites like Airbnb. That's Airbnb.com and VRBO.com, where if you know someone or have a friend that's going, you can easily stay for under $100 a night in one of these apartments and get a much better experience than you would in a hotel room, much more affordable, and you know, add someone on the couch and you're going from there. So as a tip for attending trade shows, I think that's a good one.
Would you have preferred it to be in Montreal? Because I would have preferred probably having done Vancouver, as much as I love Vancouver, and I really do like it. To be on the other side at Montreal. You've been up to more Montreal more recently.
Yeah. I think maybe I like Vancouver. I love the setup in Vancouver. I like the transport in Vancouver.
What's the
it's so beautiful
student,
there during the,
where MPC and stuff is. What's that area called? It's like, I'm going to say Jonestown, but that's not right.
Yaletown? Are they in Yaletown?
Okay. Oh, yeah, absolutely.
Okay. We're near there. We're actually, our place that we got was somewhat near there. But, yeah, it's approachable. The public transport is good. The SkyTrain from the airport is good.
The
you don't have to rent a car.
Really good.
We're going to be renting a car because we have gear. But if you're just going to attend the conference, you don't need to do that. Probably similarly in Montreal as well. But I don't know. Vancouver seems really nicely geared towards that. And I haven't actually experienced the convention center in Montreal.
Is it sock-eyed salmon, whatever that sushi is that we had last time? Oh my
God, Isakaya's too that are there, outstanding as well. So, strongly suggest if you're listening to this and if you can afford it, try and get up to Vancouver for SIGGRAPH. It's actually really worth the trip from a learning experience and a networking experience as well.
Yeah, I totally agree. I think SIDGRAPH is a tremendous learning experience. And there is, I think we've said this before, but if you haven't done much SIDGRAPHing, there's a wealth of stuff that's able to be shown in SIDGRAPH, not able to be shown anywhere else. Mm-hmm. It's not uncommon to have someone make a presentation where you're seeing making ofs and other stuff that no one else has, including us, has ever, you know, got access to for publication. So I would say it's not a case that you can get most of this just online. It's just not like that. Even with the initiatives that the ACM are doing, the studios won't give them permission to publish it online.
And the recruitment thing is also good. Even if you're not necessarily looking right now, or you're not actively looking, it's actually good to go and actually talk to people and be effectively interviewed, show them that you're real, get some feedback. That was one thing that I got from a lot of the FXPhD members at FMX, was that they really appreciated the ability to actually show they're real to people who were there at the at FMX in their area, recruitment area as well. And a really valuable tool. I mean, anytime that you can kind of go through that process of being interviewed or getting information or something, that actually serves you well. I mean, I always did that. Even when I wasn't interested in looking for a job, if someone called me at Avenue Edit, I always took an interview. Number one, it was good practice, frankly, for interviews. Number two, you actually generally learn something about the company when doing that. So lots of good reasons for doing that.
Well, yeah, I think, and I have to cover this in background fundamentals in the past when we've done this, but just to repeat some of those points, just to echo John's remarks, you think that you're wasting their time, but they don't see it like that. The recruiters have a job to get an idea who's out there, who's doing what, and sort of track people over years. And so they are really keen to talk to people. They, you know, it's not like if you interrupted me and said, could I come here and interview for a job at FX Guide? And I'd say, okay, well, we're just not hiring right now. Quite frankly, I just don't want to stop what I'm doing and get you to come here for a PhD interview when PhD isn't likely to hire you because I'm kind of busy because I have a real job doing this other thing over here that isn't recruiting. That's not how it runs. You've got a recruiter dedicated to the task whose job it is to track hundreds and hundreds of people, have databases, get a feeling for what work is being done, for a feeling of what issues are coming up. They are very keen to talk to you, and they also want you to connect with them so that if you were to later want to get a job,
exactly,
you could say, hey, I met you in Vancouver. You probably remember me. I don't know if you do, but I gave you a reel. Then here is a new copy of my reel. But they're like, oh, yes, I can remember you. You were the guy that ... And that is hugely valuable. So when we talk about networking, you know, you tend to think of it being a bit sort of like, sales rep-y, in that you're handing out business cards to network. But that's not what we're talking about. We're talking about sort of genuine keeping in the loop of what's required. And it's also for your benefit to know, hey, if I was going to give you a reel, what are the kind of things that you'd like to see, and how do you find it easiest to assess stuff? I was stunned when I first went through all this, how much recruiters are just keen to hear from people. Like, I've come off a job, I've got another job coming up, but just to let you know what I've been doing. They actually really, really like that. That's key to their job. You are not wasting their time by saying hi.
No, they want to find talented people, and they want to help, you know, they want to get people in to do the job at their facility. And yeah, they certainly do that. And that's, again, one of the things with the reel and helping you improve your reel. I also got some really great feedback from the members at FMX about, in case you're wondering, about some of the footage that we provide at FXPhD. They're very complimentary of the type of work in general that the members of FXPhD do. They actually see the footage. They understand where it comes from. They know where it comes from. But what they like about the footage at FXPhD versus on these reels versus what they've seen from other sources is that the users bring and the members bring their own perspective and creativity to the footage. They're not just regurgitating a paint-by-numbers 30-minute streaming tutorial on After Effects. You know, add this lens or you use this preset. Very complimentary in the stuff that you guys and by you guys, the members do in building shots for your reel. While maybe the actual shot is the same between different people's reels, the end result is incredibly different. It's really surprising. And I talked to some members, and I actually talked to a couple recruiters about this while at FMX. And they're very complimentary of the stuff they see out of the FXPhD members.
Yeah, I think that's a really good point, John. It's very hard if it is a play by numbers. How can you assess someone's skill? Like, yes, you managed to follow the point by point thing. You know, well done.
Yeah, good for that. And moving on. And so anyway, if you're curious about that, again, it's certainly a generally viewed as a good thing to have the FX PhD material on Real. Again, as long as you have taken it in your direction of what you feel was appropriately, creatively, and technically, frankly.
Yeah. Can I have an aside? Can I have a rat hole?
Yes.
I don't know if we've discussed it, but I just thought it was really amazing that they revamped, I guess, the One Frame of White competition that we started way back in the day.
Oh, so you're talking on Facebook for the Flame Group. Yeah, there's this private, for a bit of background, there is a private Facebook group that you can join dedicated to the Flame users. It's called Flame Users Logic, L-O-G-I-K. It was actually started by Jerome, who was a longtime friend of FX Guides and myself. He was actually in the early days of my trips to IBC. He was in Amsterdam, and now has moved on. He's actually working at ILM at this point, but he started this Facebook group. It's kind of taken... actually gotten some critical mass, I guess, mainly because the so much time that people spend on Facebook. I actually think it's a really shit place to search for stuff. If someone posts, it's horrible to try and find something. I want to find that post that someone posted. It's really, really horrible about that. But I respect what they've done to kind of bring back the community and get people talking and sharing stuff. And I think people are a little freer to discuss things or feel freer to discuss things on the Facebook page than they are on the Flame News mailing list that's set up by Autodesk and Discrete over the years. But yeah, they started this, actually did a One Frame of White competition redone, I guess you could say, Mike. Something that was done years ago. Start with it by you and Peter Webb, right?
Yeah, well, a group of people, it was sort of, I was like, you should just have this competition. Yeah, it was, but you were involved, and weren't you judging?
Yeah,
And we had this whole thing that you could do a whole lot in Flame, but just to push the envelope, we'd say, what could you do with just one input frame of white? Everything else had to be generated in the machine. Now, this is a compositing machine, much more. Distinctly compositing, not 3D back in the day, but we were kind of showing the kind of extent of stuff that could be done. And so we said, you start with one frame of white, what can you do? And we judged it at the One Frame of White kind of event as part of the user group in Vegas. This is, gotta be, what, a decade ago, right? I mean, it was just ages
ago.
Anyway, they came up with the new One Frame of White, and the original One Frame of White was great, but in part because it showed what could be done when, you know, you'd think that there was very little you could do. I think these days the line between 2D and 3D is much more blurred, so you would kind of expect to be able to do a lot in a compositing box like a Flame or a Nuke. That being said, especially the guy that got second, Lewis, in One Frame of White for the 2014 version, it was just gorgeous. Great stuff.
Yeah, it really was. And again, the idea, you know, back in the original one, you really could only have one frame of white on your desk as a starting point. And in this, because of the change in software, they, you know, made some modifications. You could have 3D models and do some other stuff as part of that. As long as you still, for textures and everything else, started with one frame of white. But you know, it's nice that those guys set it up. It was a good thing to see. I always like seeing people kind of just try and, you know, do something cool like this, you know, bring back an old favorite, I think, that we all love from back in the day, so to speak, and see what people could do with it now. I like the fact that Andy, it was actually Andy Milkus and Tim Crane in New York City, who started the New York City Flame User Group, decided to do that as part of the Facebook page. So
I love user-led stuff.
Yeah.
I mean, obviously I would, right? from what we did with FX Guide.
FX Guide, right.
But I just find it so much more authentic and valid. And I've got to say, because I don't know why I'm bringing this up, but I guess I can bring it back to the fact that I was talking to Rob at Sony Pictures about hiring. And we were discussing the fact that a really great way to get your pick job is to do user stuff, like maybe it's beta, maybe it's user group stuff, maybe it's on the community. But if you do that stuff, you get to the attention of normally the senior people in the field, be them from the equipment manufacturer point of view or from a facility. And that is a brilliant way to get your dream job, because people just hear your name and they see the stuff that you do and you post and you're really helpful and blah, blah, blah. And aren't those all the attributes that you want from an employee? That they're self-motivated, that they post, that they are keen to share with others, that they're not nasty and whatever. And so, you know, he was saying that he's hired a bunch of people over the years from, you know, somebody just posting good, healthy stuff in a news group kind of environment. And I've spoken to other people at other facilities that you might think, well, how can I stand out from the crowd and, you know, how can I whatever? But you can get to know a lot of the key people just from communications online. And then that can dovetail into you approaching someone for a job and saying, you know, so-and-so kind of knows my work. I've emailed with him a bunch of times and them going, oh, yeah, yeah, he's great. Yeah, yeah. You should definitely talk to that guy. I find that to be a tremendous edge. And I think anything like this that's not quite so through the company, you know, like a whatever, just has such validity and resonates so well with people. It's just such a makes you smile kind of stuff. It's great to do it. I know people like doing pet projects, but I would say there's a lot more to be gained by doing something in your user community than there is just sticking cool stuff up on YouTube and trying to get a bunch of hits. You know, if you can direct a bit of work towards a community that's you know, legitimate and not bitchy and nasty and something that's actually genuine. It's really, really good.
Yeah, it is. And actually to that, and we're actually going to be starting a Flame Music group out here in LA. Actually starting in June.
So, really?
Yeah. Yep. Looking forward to having that in June. We'll have details coming up soon. People generally procrastinate. So, but we're just getting the final details on that and probably should have something out next week. So it should be some fun as well. Have some special guests, cool projects, things like that. And probably congratulate the winner of the One Frame of White competition GP, who actually lives a block over from me in Venice.
Yeah, yeah, no, absolutely.
He's actually one of the guys. He's actually one of the guys took a push and or took a leap of faith and really was supportive of the whole Smoke on Mac thing. Too, right from the release, kind of seeing how I don't know, just integrating that in his workflow, not just as a Flame artist, but also in ways that he can actually do work at home as a freelancer too. So he's been quite active in the Smoke on Mac community as well.
So sorry, just as I was listening to you talk, I scrolled the that group, you know, the Logic group, and there's a photo.
Of Philippe.
There's standing there with his hands up saying, there's already a bug logged for that and we intend to fix it in a future release. And I just, sorry. It was just,
yes, Brian Mulligan. The humor of Brian Mulligan. Yes, exactly.
That's just the funniest thing I've seen all day. I'm sorry, that's just hysterical. Yeah.
Yes.
Oh, dear. But, you know, there are great things happening in a whole bunch of communities, and we just happen to be talking about the Flame community. This applies just as equally to... I mean, my sentiments are completely echoed in, say, the Moto community when we were doing stuff in LA, especially around the design community in LA, and just how key it was. The LA Moto community were very good at supporting each other and doing stuff. And, again, exactly the same thing. It really applies and dovetails in well.
Yeah, and it's something too. It's like, you know, I certainly appreciate the efforts of the various manufacturers and the companies to set it off on their own, but it just always comes off as, you know, run by that company. And there's something that seems in general much more artist friendly or genuine when the new users set it up. And obviously with the support of Autodesk, I'm sure that the New York users group is having the support of them, and we are as well. They're helping us out and providing speakers and things like that. But again, I really like the perspective of having it run by the users, the user perspective, and not what the manufacturer wants you to hear or wants you to think you need to hear or manufacturer thinks you need to hear. It's what we want to talk about, right? I think that's the best thing about that. I think that's the best thing about the user-led events.
Yes. Hey, can I plug two things on FX Guide by way of informing our listeners? Actually about three things. So there's coverage coming up today. So by the time you listen to this that you've done, John, you might want to talk about that to do with just dovetailing with that previous discussion about Flame. Do you want to just touch on that?
Oh, yeah, really quickly. I caught up with Sam Edwards, who's a longtime Flame Mars from back in the day. And now, I guess, but I just mean back in the day because both all of us, Mike, Jeff, and myself, all know Sam, have known Sam a long time. Covering his work on Cosmos Space Time Odyssey, which is the new, the remake of the Cosmos series that was done with Carl Sagan back in the day. Sam actually is a owner of a Flame system, obviously also an artist, but in this case, he actually ended up actually working inside the production offices of Cosmos, so working effectively for the production. And he worked there for about 8 months in Hollywood. Worked on probably well over 250 shots, generated over 30,000 frames of visual effects for it. And so we talk a little bit about his background and process of working in-house on production side, it's called. In other words, not working for a VFX vendor that is hired by production, but literally working internally with producers. As well as actually breaking down some of the work he did on the job, and kind of shows his philosophy of how he does composites and his work with Inside Action and Batch Inside Flame. And he's been, again, has such a long history of experience on Flame. I found it pretty interesting in listening to him, seeing how he worked inside the box.
Yeah, so that's that, as I say, will be out now by the time you hear this, because I'm sure it... that'll be the case just in terms of scheduling. But the other thing is we've got two things that I wanted to flag. One, we've got a really great interview coming up with Gareth Edwards, who is the director of Godzilla. And we sat down for like over an hour with Gareth, and that's coming up in a podcast. That'll come out exactly when Godzilla comes out, which is kind of the weekend of the 17th, 18th of May. And I think you guys will really like it. It's a great chat. He's a terrific guy. And, of course, an FX PhD prof. I can't remember which term he taught in, but it was one of the, at the time, one of the most successful courses we'd done, at least certainly very, very popular. And heck of a nice guy, isn't he?
Yeah, he is. Really fantastic guy. And it's actually, his course is actually still running as part of the vault at this point. So if you're a member of this term, you can get access to that as well.
Yeah, so that's coming up, and I think you guys are really, really going to enjoy it a lot. It's a piece that we're kind of really proud of. And there's some other good stuff coming out as well, but there's a bunch of stuff to do with Spider-Man and
Captain really America. Cool, yeah, really cool. I actually enjoyed the actually haven't gotten through it fully, but the Spider-Man 2 podcast with Jerome Chin.
Yeah, I had a really good rat hole with him over doing human faces, because he worked on the original stuff from I always say Starlight Express, Polar Express, and so he's in a really good position to comment on human faces. So yeah, so that's all there. It's a bunch of stuff on FX Guide, and of course with the summer blockbusters rolling out, we are looking forward to even more stuff, not just Godzilla, but things like X-Men. I'm really looking forward to that film. I think it'll be a cracker. Have you seen the promos for that, the trailers?
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Yes. Very cool.
Very much so. And no, I just noticed at the site you released the VFX show as well, covering Captain America.
Yes, that was Cap, and we've got Spider-Man coming. We tend to try and put out the VFX show a little bit delayed from the film's release because it's a huge spoiler.
Spoilers.
Yeah, and we're going to be picking stuff apart. It's really want people a chance to have seen it. I think in the case of the written stories, you can kind of choose to read them. In the podcast, they come as part of your download, so they sort of appear in your iTunes or on your... on your phone now. But there used to be a device that was like an iPhone that just had music. I think it was like a pod. Anyway, so because it tends to auto-download, we tend to just delay those a little after. The other thing was, in the case of Captain America, there was quite an embargo on us publishing the written story for reasons to do with them not wanting to give away the plot line.
Mm-hmm.
So we couldn't publish our big written story. We were allowed to publish a piece we did with Wired pretty much when the film came out, so that was great. But the behind-the-scenes stuff, spoiler alert, to do with Hydra, we weren't allowed to publish, and so we waited on that. So we also wanted to time the VFX show that, because clearly it's helpful if we're talking about a lot of these shots. that you can actually go and have a look at that material. Now, the reason that I thought of that is because when we were talking about the flame stuff, I was going to say that some of the best flame work going right now, in my opinion, is the aging of Peggy Carter, and for that matter, the slimming down of Captain America in his Chris Edwards to skinny Steve form that is happening again in this film. So in the first film they did it, obviously the skinny Steve stuff I thought was some of the most spectacular work. I think the skinny Steve stuff in the second one is even better than the skinny Steve stuff in the first one. But the one that really just makes is jaw-dropping is the aging of the actress to play Peggy, because they shot the original actress, as we discuss in that article, just with a few dots on her face, like about a dozen dots, and then they tracked and did all of the aging makeup in flame. Now, her hair was grey, and she was obviously in a costume of an elderly person in a bed, but her entire face was treated digitally, and there are before and after photos there. But I just found that, John, when I was watching it, and you can see it yourself just by looking in, even at the stills on our story, just remarkable flame work from Lola. I mean, those guys, oh my God, just spectacular. And it's hard work. This is not, let's just do it all in 3D. This is precise, painstaking, beautifully crafted work. So yeah, I joked, I think, on one of the podcasts that I'd drink Lola's bathwater. Those guys just immense respect.
Depends. Sorry, thinking of some of the principles. I'm not so sure about that, but hey, anyway. I know what you mean. Sorry. I just did a spit take. I'm sorry.
Sorry, I didn't mean to put you off your afternoon coffee
about
there.
Throwing me out. I was not expecting that.
Edson's a good guy. Not yes, that I particularly fancy him, but, you know. The point is, good work. That's
exactly
the point. Not my no. sexual fetish with the
no, nothing of that. Nothing.
Their bathing habits. Yeah, no, it's really, that's good. It's spectacular good work.
It is.
I mean, there is a lot of good work in those Marvel Universe stuff and, you know, really nice compositing all around. But, I don't know, just for me, that skinny Steve stuff just stood out as being, I would say, by far the best part of the first Captain America film. I mean, I was just gobsmacked when I saw that the first time.
Yeah, and it's nice that they can actually share some of the work they do, because I do know that they do so much other work that they can never even talk about. You know, it's nice. It's nice to that they can actually get a little bit of have a little bit of light shine on the work they do, because again, so much of what they have to do is unmentionable.
They did the anti-aging stuff on Hugo as well in stereo. I remember that. I remember seeing it in stereo, and I was thinking, oh my God, it's one thing to pull this off in mono. But to pull it off in a stereo de-aging, I was just like, good God. But I, in a sense, I could sort of tell that that was an effect. It wasn't that it was bad work. It was spectacularly good work. But for some reason, I just, you know, sort of could almost sense something, maybe just because I've got trained eyes at it. In this case with the elderly and I really do think it was good work, but in this case of the elderly Peggy, oh my God, I just stared at this going, you have got to be friggin' kidding me. If I was a makeup artist right now, because age makeup is really hard, I would be just guys. For makeup artists, it's the Jurassic Park moment where somebody just says, you know what, digitally we can pull this off better than you can do with a practical solution. And not that your practical solutions don't have still good uses in good places, but for this particular instance, I reckon it's faultless.
Yeah. Pretty amazing. Well, hey, my friend, I need to get going. And we're about at the end of the day here. I need to wrap up some stuff before heading home for the night. But as always, thanks for taking the time to chat. And to our people, to other people listening, thanks for taking the time to listen.
Yeah, thanks, guys.
We'll talk to you next week. And if you have any, again, we haven't gotten any questions, but feel free to ping us, drop us a line via email if you have any questions for the podcast, and we'll get them answered next week or anytime that you send them in. Thanks,
yeah, especially
guys.
About showreels and stuff. That'll be great.
Yeah, for sure.
Thanks, guys.
Bye.
Thanks for listening. This podcast is copyright FX PhD.